Holy banana slashes and survivor girls. There's a light at the end of this tunnel. Welcome back to another edition of the Creepy Real Horror Cast. I'm Mr. Smeg.
I'm Lunchbox. I kind of just for like a split second forgot my own name.
Really?
It's that kind of deal. Where's my mimosa? I need my energy drinks. Oh, there it is on my counter. One second. Continue. I'll go get it.
He needs his blankie and his juicy and a snack.
Do we have any of those?
You should. It's your house.
It is my house.
We're not recording at my place today.
Yeah.
So, here we are. We are starting the 40-year timeline. It is another reset. What is this, the fourth one?
Yeah.
Let's count.
I've said this before, I've said it time and time again, I absolutely hate this timeline because it's goddamn confusing.
First of all, it's timelines. Plural.
Yeah. But no, I think this is the fourth variation.
This, I think, is the fourth timeline. Don't add us if we got that wrong a little bit.
I mean, I don't necessarily count the Rob Zombie remake stuff, just like as far as the timeline goes. That's like its own little thing.
Well, it's considered its own. Yeah. It's considered its own. It's still a timeline. It's just sort of an adjacent.
Anyway. Yeah.
But yeah, so we're starting the 40-year timeline on this one. We're doing Halloween 2018 this week. Next week will be Halloween Kills. And then the following week, for the first time ever, which I'm equal parts excited about and regretting because this was all my idea, we're going to do a timely episode and do Halloween Ends. So, fun.
Yeah, so... I was all on board with it. I was just like, you know, yeah, we haven't done a spoiler movie where it's literally the movie drops and then we do a review for it that week after.
Yeah.
And then, so right there, that word, week, I was like, okay, yeah, we'll watch it. And then we go. The way that you were playing is like, no, it drops, we do our episode, like, that following day.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit. Editing, his power's activated.
Yeah. Like, you're going to have that bad boy turned around by Monday so it drops on Tuesday.
You know, I do have a job.
I believe in you.
Work.
You're going to do great.
That means that I'm going to have to go and watch it at a very late release and then come home and then somehow we're going to have to work on like the next day. Okay.
I have the schedule already. I've told you the schedule. You just don't remember it.
My brain. It's
my
just
brain.
All the jellies.
Do you feel it in your jellies?
Oh, it courses through the veins.
Halloween. The H-40, 40-year timeline, whatever you want to call it. Your titles
what,
may vary.
What did they... They just called it just Halloween, right?
It's called just Halloween. This kicked off the trend of, like, the requels or soft reboots or whatever you want to call them. This kicked off the trend of them, of movies just calling themselves the thing of the original movie. So Scream did it this year. They just called themselves Scream.
That's right. They did do.
Yeah.
It wasn't like Scream 5
and then the text
5
chain,
or
and then
whatever.
The, no. And then the... Or 5 Cream, if you were looking at the movie post.
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
I'm a child.
5 Cream.
5 Cream. I think the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie that came out this year is also called Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that the Texas Chainsaw Massacre one was going to be a literal, like, another remake of it. And this was a variation on, like, they kind of did what Halloween did with this one where they just kind of took the timeline and then sped it up. Everything that was in the middle
didn't happen. Well, I mean, they literally just ripped off this movie to make the Texas Chainsaw movie.
100%.
That's all that they did. Even bringing back Sally. It's like, why?
Yeah. I sat there and watched it. I was just like, wait a minute.
Yeah, and the actress who played Sally has been dead for like 5 or 6 years now. So
yeah.
She's been gone for a while.
Granted, the lady that they got to play the like old lady Sally, I was like, you know what? She was good. I liked it. But, I mean, it was still one of those things where it's like, man, this is... They literally were just like, oh, what idea are we going to do? Let's put a whole bunch of, like, high-tech you know, people, Silicon Valley stuff, into this rural area to start up a new land, and then we'll also mix in with...
Hey, just a reminder.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I'm going to stop you right there, because we're not talking about that one. And I would like to put that one off as long as humanly possible, because, oh boy.
Yeah, the kills were fun.
Okay. Well, there's that. So, I guess Halloween came out October 19th, 2018. It was made for a budget of approximately $10 million. This fucker was a juggernaut. It made $255.6 million worldwide.
I would be very surprised if it didn't.
This was the highest grossing Halloween film. This is the biggest one of the entire goddamn franchise.
Now, before you get back into all the purrs and stuff, and then sorry to kind of jump in, but like my brain just kind of hit. So, does that count for like inflation at all? I mean,
I don't know. As in dollar, if you want to just talk dollar for dollar, it's fine.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's like when you talk about inflation, especially like for this day and age where you're just like, we have IMAX movies, and it's like that's $14 a pop. It's and compared to back in the day when Halloween original came out, it's like
I don't know because that's way outside of my pay grade.
Well, you need to get on it. Like, come
Look,
on,
man. If I knew I was gonna have to do math, I needed more advanced warning than just this second. Yeah. Well, I would have figured that out, and well, I would have done the research if I'd have known you were gonna be asking me that.
But you know, we talked about that. Like, it was a year ago or something like that, or years ago.
Yeah. Adjusted for inflation, Gone with the Wind is still one of the top grossing movies of all time.
That's what I'm saying. It was like, yeah. So there's like, Jaws being like the biggest box office, you know, draw, but it was like biggest box office draw for, you know, like in like 1970. Now there has been more than that, but it's just like, so that's, sure. It's just a kind of an interesting thing where it's like, yeah, it's got a huge box office, but
it made a fuckload of money.
Yeah.
It was written and directed, or I'm sorry, it was written by Jeff Bradley, Danny McBride, David Gordon Green. Yes, kids. Danny McBride.
Big old titties.
Mm-hmm. That one. Mr. Eastbound and Down himself.
Yeah.
It was based on characters created by John Carpenter and Deborah Hill. This was directed by David Gordon Green. This one also is the approved, quote-unquote approved, John Carpenter timeline.
Yep.
Because he was directly involved in this one as a producer and as a composer. The movie stars Jamie Lee Curtis back as Laurie Strode, Judy Greer as Karen, Andy Maticek as Allison, James Jude Courtney as The Shape, Nick Castle popping up in a couple of scenes also as The Shape. He's reprising his role as Michael Myers. Halleck, Bill Ginner as Dr. Sartain, Will Patton as Officer Hawkins, Ryan Reese as Dana, Jefferson Hall as Aaron, Toby Huss as Ray, Virginia Gardner as Vicky, Dylan Arnold as Cameron, Miles Robbins as Dave, Drew Scheid as Oscar, and then a newcomer who probably stole this movie from me was Jabril Nantambu, the kid. Oh my
God.
I love that kid so much.
Like, I can't wait to see that kid in more stuff. He's awesome.
Right? Like, come on. And then I'm just looking to see if they brought back anybody for cameos or anything, but no, not for this one. Oh, no, they brought back PJ Souls in a cameo. She played a teacher at the school. I think she's really the only one. So anyway, that's still pretty cool. So Halloween 2018, age 40. I had a very sad realization watching this, and it makes me sad to admit this out loud and to even add this into conversation. This movie is exactly like the 78 original, almost beat for beat. In some places they swapped Laurie for Michael, but it's almost the exact same movie.
Yes, I'm actually kind of very surprised that you didn't realize that before.
I think I was so excited the first time I watched this because it was just so well done.
That's what you were going to drop on me? Like, you were just leaning up like, oh my God, I have something to talk about, but I don't want to drop it on you just yet, and I want to save it for the podcast, and that's what it was? Yeah, of course it is. It's like every Halloween movie is the same Halloween movie.
I think because of the spin they put on it with the way Laurie was handling her PTSD and the way she became a prepper, and the fact that they cut out a lot of the cult of They cut out the entirety of the Cult of Thorns shit. They cut out the brother-sister timeline, which I think is probably
the California trip.
Yeah, the California trip. That's all gone.
Trick or treat, motherfucker.
That does not exist. They upped the brutality. They made the mask look better. Like, they did things... David Gordon Green did things to fix things. He definitely took the babysitter murders and turned them up to 11. Without the Rob Zombie-isms.
So, as you mentioned, it's like they did take a lot of the same beats from the first film and put them into, like... I don't know if it was more of, like, a fan nod than actually having... Because as I'm watching this, I felt that after watching... And again, this is after watching all of these Halloween movies back to back to back. It's... They all start to blend in. They start to kind of do the same thing. Granted, almost every horror franchise that deals with a particular killer, they all do that. For Nightmare on Elm Street, you got the fucking Elm Street house. Somehow they always go back to the Elm Street house. Not the boiler room, the fucking Elm Street.
And it took 8 movies to finally get away from Camp Crystal Lake.
Exactly. Camp Crystal Lake, it's somehow always dealt with that kind of... There's always a structure... Kids coming into the, you know, on his property, and he's like, get off my lawn. But that was the thing, was in this one, it didn't make me feel like I was watching something that I've already seen before. Like going back to the 78 version, right? I felt like they were two separate movies.
Yeah, I think that they managed to follow a lot of the plot. As disappointing as it was to have that realization, they still managed to follow a lot of the plot beats without insulting our intelligence. And, at least I thought, anyway.
Well, like, for instance, the one thing that I actually thought that you would have... were going to chirp on was the fact that, again, we're dealing with Michael in a hospital.
Yeah. We're at Smith's Grove.
We're at Smith's Grove, right?
And we're going to be doing a transfer, a patient transfer.
Another one.
Yep.
And it goes horribly, horribly wrong.
Again.
And then Michael gets out and then heads back home.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Like, everything that kind of hits those points, but it was just that was the one thing that I kind of felt was just like, again, hospital fucking up. Michael getting out and then going on killing spree.
Right. And I think the twisty on this one, which seemed, I don't know, depending on what your thought process is, it either helps or it hurts, was having Dr. Sartain be the one who orchestrated the wreck.
And he was the
breaking him out.
He was definitely the villain of the film, which was a very interesting...
Yeah, we'll talk about him in a minute.
Yeah.
Mecca, what was it? Nega Loomis?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, like, I think that the twisty where it wasn't negligence or incompetence this time, it was a deliberate setup to let Michael out, was a nice little wrinkle to kind of spice up an otherwise nothing of a plot. Well, maybe it's not a nothing, but a retread of the plot.
Yeah. And then on top of that, where it's hitting all those points, and that's where I was saying it was more of a fan nod. It is a really cool shot of having Lori outside of the high school, like Michael did.
Yeah.
I was like, stuff like that. I was like, putting Lori in those shape spots and things like that. I was like, I dig on that. That's cool.
Yeah, that was a nice little wrinkle doing that too, is putting Lori is so far gone, she is becoming... She's really not that different from Michael, ultimately, because she still has weird behaviors and she's probably a tiny bit sociopathic, because she did run down the stairs with a gun in her hand and point it at her daughter and her daughter's husband.
Yeah.
Because that's normal, healthy behavior. Bang, you're dead. Mom, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. But that was the thing, was... after watching 4, 5, 6 H2O and Resurrection, after watching all of those, it kind of hurts that we didn't get the daughter and the in that kind of
the Jamie Lloyd daughter,
the Jamie Lloyd, yeah. The fact that we didn't get that, and we got Karen, and that's where it was just like, what the fuck happened? Like, now we have to, instead of going from Lori having the daughter into Lori having the son into now having a daughter who has had a full-blown life, and now we have to catch up again as to who the fuck Karen is.
Yeah, however, everything else has been erased.
The writing in this movie helps tremendously. Because that was the one thing, out of all my bitching and moaning, out of all the Halloween series, this one I didn't mind. And
no, the script was tight as fuck. Like, yeah.
And that was the thing, was having Karen, I actually liked her to a degree. I understood her. They made you, in a weird way, sympathize with her, because, and they also put in that whole feeling that she's gone through for her entire life with Lori, and you kind of get that tension where, like, the dinner scene where it's like she gives zero fucks at this point, where Lori starts like drinking and doing,
and she's crying, and the whole thing.
She starts going off, and then she's like, "See, this is why we don't invite you out to things." It's just, it's like, okay, but then, and then the gun scene too, where it's just like, "Mom, what the fuck? Get the hell out!" Like,
yeah,
you know, and in so many words,
you know, we don't allow guns in this house. Shut up, Toby Huss.
Yeah.
Go wipe the peanut butter off your penis. That was a Danny McBride line.
That was the,
there is no one else you can blame for that line except for Danny fucking McBride.
That's so good. You know, all right, so that actor, I forget his name. What's his name?
It's Toby Huss.
Toby. So I remember, like, so after I saw him, I was like, I was having major flashbacks in my childhood. You ever seen the movie Down Periscope?
No.
Oh, that's a fun one. He plays this guy. I think his name is Sonar. He's the radio technician. And in order to get the radio to work, or it's like radio, it's like, I think it's like radar or something like that. Some type of term for his name. But like, in order to get the ship to work for the radio, mm-hmm. he has to basically electrocute himself to, like, he'll grab a wire on one side of the ship and grab another one, and he shocks himself so that the radio works, like, he gets all the shit.
Well, like, I just pulled up Toby Huss's filmography, because I remember seeing him in other things.
Oh, yeah, but that's the one thing that
he's basically a character actor.
And he does a really good Frank Sinatra.
Does he?
Yeah, like in Down Periscope, like he shocked himself and he starts singing Frank. And it's like, oh my god, so good.
Yeah, he was in Reno 911 as Big Mike.
That's right.
He and this is how, here's the Danny McBride connection. He's in The Righteous Gemstones as Dale.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Glow as Tex McCready. That's where I remember seeing him from most recently. Harvey Birdman, Attorney General.
Yep.
The Venture Brothers. He did a bunch of voices on The Venture Brothers. Let's see, y'all. Where else has he done? He did a couple of episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Mm-hmm.
He did a couple He did a couple of episodes of Veep. I'm looking for, like, his real out there. He did some episodes of Children's Hospital. He did some voices on Sanjay and Craig. He did an episode of Garfunkel and Oates.
Mm-hmm.
He did an episode of Key and Peele. He was in Bad Milo. He, like, The Adventures of Pete and Pete, the 20th anniversary reunion.
He was definitely one of those, like, he's just that actor that just, he's that guy that just kind of pops up.
He did a bunch of voices for Beavis and, he did voices on Beavis and Butthead. He did an episode of The Cleveland Show. He was in Cowboys and Aliens. He's done an episode of Adventure Time. He's been in Bob's Burgers, King of the Hill. Oh my god, he was Khan in King of the Hill.
Yeah. You didn't know that? Oh my god.
No, he was also Cotton.
Yeah, I knew he was Cotton.
No, but, I didn't know that. Good lord. Jesus, he did an episode of 30 Rock. He's been in everything. Curb Your Enthusiasm, Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law.
Like I said, he's just, like, that guy.
Yeah, he just pops up fucking everywhere. So, I mean, he's...
But Down Periscope was the one that, like, I locked in, and then all of a sudden when he started talking about the peanut butter on his penis, I was like, really, dude?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's awesome.
He is did News Radio, The Adventures of Pete and Pete. Anyway, yeah, so Toby Huss is a busy man.
He's awesome.
Also, he gets killed off screen and is completely forgotten about.
Yeah, that kind
of... That's a bit of a ball drop right there, guys.
Yeah, they... it's like, how much did Karen actually love you, dude? Because, yeah, she kind of gets engulfed with the whole hunt of Michael, and then all of a sudden at the end, like, it goes into Halloween Kills.
I think that's when she finally realizes, hey, my husband's missing.
Yeah, it's like, oh, there's some shit going down. Yeah. I think she sees him. Like, she knows that he's dead.
I don't remember if she saw the body or not, but definitely at the end, yeah, it was in Halloween Kills, they finally acknowledge it. But he goes the rest of this movie without his daughter or his wife acknowledging that he's gone. Like, they're fucking off at the end of the movie when the house is burning down.
Yeah.
They're in the back of that truck, and not one of those women goes, hey, where's Dad?
No, well, that's where I think Karen saw that he was dead. And then that's when the whole thing with Michael started to pick up. So I don't think that she had the time to come down from all that, because it was
priorities.
Like, exactly. Like, there was a thing where it was like, you can't sit there and go bitch mode and just be like, oh my god, like, in every other, like, horror movie, like a zombie movie, where you sit there and go, oh my god, instead of, like, trying to, like, make sure I survive. It's like, I got to go out and save my husband, who was an idiot that ran out the front door. Yeah. And it's just like, so.
Hang on a second.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, priorities. Like, you can't, he's already dead. There's nothing you can do beyond that point. You compartmentalize that and move on, because there is a much more important thing going on of, okay, now I can't die. Did you have, they definitely ramped up the violence in this movie quite a lot, where the 78, this is supposed to be a direct sequel to the 78 movie. So the 78 movie, a lot of people have in their heads that it was a lot more violent than it actually was. It's this weird Mandela effect thing with the movie. But it was actually pretty tame in terms of the violence and the gore. This one doesn't quite go Rob Zombie levels, but the brutality gets ratcheted way up comparatively. 100%. Do you have a favorite kill in this one? Michael did some things that he's never really done before.
Strangely enough, almost every kill in this movie, I loved more than pretty much any kill in the series. Strangely though, most of the really cool kills were all done off screen. Almost every kill that he had happened off screen at some point in time.
Yeah.
And that was the thing, was most of the time I sit there and go, oh, I want to fucking see it. Like in Halloween 4, where with the cop that was, like, folded up and Michael is in the rocking chair and then he does the impale with the hot chick on the we know.
He got it twisted up into a pretzel. The cop got twisted up into a pretzel, and we didn't get to see it. We just got to see the aftermath. With this one, though, the pair of cops, the ones that were having that Quentin Tarantino scene where they're talking about the sandwiches, interesting choice, but we're gonna throw in the random Tarantino scene. Okay. So,
Talk about them in a second, but
to have the to have Michael drive up and then leave them posed up where the head of one is in the lap of the other with a flashlight shoved up the neck hole so he gets turned into a jack-o'-lantern. I don't even need to see the kill because that's brutal as fuck and it looks really cool.
Yeah.
Does it make sense? No. But is it awesome? Yep, sure is.
He is the apex decorator.
He still is. They never dropped that plot point.
Yeah. He is the apex decorator.
And this time he stabbed, it was Dave. He, Vicky's boyfriend. He did another, alright, let me tell you what he did first and then I'll ask my question. So, he did another pin-to-the-wall kill.
Uh-huh.
This time it was through the neck, so at least it made a bit more sense. Because you can't get a kitchen knife all the way through someone's torso and get them pinned to the wall and the whole bit. Did it make all of the sense? No. But you could kind of wrap your brain around a little bit more because the neck is so much thinner than your chest. Yeah. Now, my question. Why do we insist on continuing to do that particular kill? It's in all of them. Like, why do we have to continue doing this?
Literally all.
It's in every single movie. Yeah. He pins, generally it's with a knife. One of them, he pinned her to the wall with a rifle. But he's pinning bodies to the wall. That is his shtick. Yes, apex decorator. We need to make that a t-shirt. But he, it's every movie. There's this insistence on including this kill. Why?
And that's where I was like, I almost feel it's like, it's got to be some type of fan nod. Or that's just like, oh, that's just an easy way to, for Michael to just manhandle and then...
Well, and that brings up another point. Eventually, we'll work our way back around here to something that's staying on track. But that brings up another point is a lot of the fan winky bullshit actually kind of bothered me. Like, it's cheap. It's real low-hanging fruit. Like, I appreciated the inclusion of the silver shamrock masks, because that one often...
That was in Kills.
No, it was in this one, too.
They did this one, too?
Mm-hmm. There was a few kids trick-or-treating wearing the silver shamrock masks.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. So, I appreciate that, as a nod to Halloween 3, because it really is a great movie, and it gets sidelined a lot by the Michael Myers purist types, because it's not really a Halloween movie. So, to bring in that particular Easter egg, I actually quite appreciated. But a lot of them, because they've been done in every movie, I'm kind of over a lot of the fan winky bullshit.
Yeah. And the only reason I think that in this film that it was okay they did stuff like that is because this is... How long was it between zombies films and this?
Halloween, 9 years between H2 and this one.
So 9 years. And then this is supposed to be 40 years between 78 and this timeline. So I think it's okay that they did that. Granted, it's like, okay, so fans being 9 years separated from Michael on top of a 40-year timeline in the story... So it's like maybe having a few of that stuff, like with Lori outside the high school, like doing all the stuff that Michael would do, or it's like having, you know, the Smith Grove stuff. Like, you know what? Like for me, and this is coming from me, by the way, it didn't bother me, and that was something where it's because the writing was good, the quality of the movie was good, the kills were on point, even though they were off screen, they still were brutal. And that was something that was
about like 50-50 on screen or off screen.
Yeah. But that was the thing, was they did it right. And that was something that was compared to all the other films. And again, this is from us watching all the bad films back to back to back. And we have this thing of, like... Because that was another thing that I noticed, too, was, like, okay, so they basically rehashed most of the gas station scene from, I believe, what was it, 4? Where, yeah, 4, where he had the bandage.
Yeah.
Kills all the people in the gas station and then fucks off. He does that with the podcasters. Mm-hmm. It's like, but it was done better because of it was brutality and he actually went and killed people.
I mean, the teeth part was pretty brutal. Like, that was pretty awesome.
I mean, he also did the purse scene where he steals the girl's purse in the bathroom and it's like, that was a thing from, was it, H2O? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's like, they definitely took, I don't know if it was literal, like, fan nods, or if they just happened to take those similar ideas.
No, and those were all written in on purpose.
Yeah.
So, they were pulling in elements from all of the other films. So, this was supposed to be a direct connect to Halloween 1. So, Halloween 2 and beyond, everything got wiped away. The slate was clean. So this is technically Halloween 2.
But that's what I mean, is because in this timeline where everything has been wiped, having those nods of those other films that have technically should not be anywhere in the timeline, it's like having those parts like the gas station killings and stuff like that, or having, you know, the stuff at Smith's Grove, really, it's the whole thing of Michael getting out and then, like, going off and killing people. Because, like, it's technically going from 78 to this film, right? 2 technically didn't happen, right?
No, he's in Smith's Grove. He's been there since he got caught the night of the babysitter murders in 1978.
No, that's what I'm saying, though. But, like,
Halloween 2 does not exist.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, so yeah, Halloween 2 doesn't happen, but that's where all that stuff, yeah. So this definitely has all those same beats, but like I said, it didn't bother me. Because
they did it better.
They did it better, and it's like I remember when the movie was coming out, trailers were hitting, and I was going on this rant. I sat down and did the timeline and the math for how I was like, we're literally getting old lady Lori and old man Michael, and we're watching the nursing home fight each other. Mm-hmm. I was like, I didn't know how to feel about that. And I was just very upset. I was like, I don't want to watch that. I was like, how is that going to be interesting? And then as I got into the film, I was just like, this is what I want. And it's like, this is what everyone that has told me that, oh, Michael's just a shark. He's just going out and doing all this stuff. And yeah. So back to your original question before we went on this massive tangent.
We made our way back around.
But to answer your question, one of my favorite kills is his 2-minute walkthrough.
Oh, yeah. Town. The no cut scene.
The no cut 2-minute killing spree was incredible. I have not seen anything like that in a very long time since Shaun of the Dead, where they do the
no cut.
No cut. And it's like, that is a very cool thing, but that makes it that whole explanation of Michael just doing things, just going out, and he's just the shark. You were in his area, you were getting fucked.
Yeah.
You know, so I think wasn't one of the girl that was in the mirror, in the window that looked out, that got the knife, the CGI knife through the neck. I thought she was in the 78 film too.
No.
I thought she was.
No.
Even then, that was still really cool because you see Michael go by. She comes up in the window. All of a sudden, Michael comes.
But you can see him going around the back of the house. Like, don't get me wrong. I like this movie quite a lot. Like, I'm very upfront. Like, I thought this movie was incredibly well done. I don't know if it's because we've watched them all in such quick succession that I noticed, or it's coming on the back of the seeing the pattern of rehashing all the way through that I was disappointed seeing it this time around. But one of the things that I think was great is they did get rid of the Michael Myers teleportation powers. because you saw him walk around the back, like, you could see, because there was the front window, and then there was the side window, and you could see a shape go around the side window, and he came around through the back door when she was looking out the front window. Yeah. So that was kind of nice.
He is quiet and light as fuck,
though. He's got Skeeto feet.
Like, dude, like that, like, as he's walking through that two-minute deal, and he breaks into the house where the old lady that was making the sandwich, they do a nod back to her, and he ends up, I believe, killing her, right?
She wasn't an old lady, she was a mom. She was probably in her 40s, but because there was a baby upstairs. But yeah, he had gotten a hold of a hammer, and he had gone in through that house, and he beat the woman to death with the hammer, stole her kitchen knife, and then made his way through the rest of the house. He went through the baby's room.
The baby was in the living room, and he just walked by.
But
the
crib. No, it was the baby's room. It was a separate room.
Was it?
Yeah. He made his way through the baby's room, and he stops and looks at the baby for a second. And this is after he's already killed a kid. But he decides, nah, and then leaves. He keeps going. So apparently, he draws the line at infants. Okay, but yeah, that unbroken, uncut, just walkthrough was a really cool shot. It's the only one in this film. So it's not like they did that consistently at all, but it was still really cool to see.
I mean, so, like, that was my favorite, just because, like I said, it gave me that understanding of, okay, that's what everyone's been talking about.
This, yes. So, I agree with you on that one. This one does the best job of making Michael look like the shark, the brainless killer. And he has one purpose and one purpose only, and that is
making... He only has one purse.
And it doesn't even go with his shoes. It's just to cause mayhem and murder wherever he goes. That's his only cause in life, is to do this. And there's not a lot of rhyme and reason. You can argue that, sure, maybe he is after Lori to a point, but he's not. He's just wandering around Haddonfield, just killing anybody that interests him.
Yeah. And that was something that was very different for the story, because
he didn't seem to have a mission.
We get the good doctor is the one that is literally directing, like, he's guiding in a weird way Michael, like, to go and do this thing. But much like in, and this is where it became a complete rip for the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre compared to this movie. Because I like that they did do the whole Lori going batshit crazy. Compared to H2O, where she literally just fucks off to California, becomes a principal.
Oh, yeah. And, no, here she knuckled down and prepared for what she thought was...
stayed in Haddonfield. Yeah. She knew Michael would come back. She knew that she was going to be the one to... She didn't just, like, fuck off, change her name, and then and kind of, you know, tuck her tail between her legs.
Nope.
It's like she just went out and went fucking crazy good. She's got a practicing, you know, gun range.
Yep.
She has been, like, in this survival mode, where I think, you know, Nancy would be pretty happy. She's like, you know, I'm in survival. It's like, oh, did you look at this book? You know, with all the booby traps and...
Oh, for sure. You know. And that's what I appreciate, because up until this point, this is going to ruffle some feathers. Lori was not a very good final girl.
No.
She... I guess you could argue potentially at the end of H2O, because she kind of got her shit together at that point. But for the most part, whenever Lori has popped up in this series, she's not... For the first two films, most of age 20, and then she died in Resurrection. They pushed her off a building.
In a dumb way.
They pushed her off a building into some bushes. She really wasn't very good. She wasn't proactive. She was running and crying and hiding the whole time. Granted, when Carpenter made the 78 film, this was not supposed to be a series. It was a one and done. It was the Babysitter Murders. There was, it's just the whole, the Shape fixated on these, the set of three girls that he saw that interested him, and he stalked them and killed them. And somehow Lori had survived. There was no reason for it. He just took interest and was like, oh, I'm going to go and do that.
So that was something that in this film where it's Lori is, she's kind of taken that, I'm not going to be the weak lamb anymore. No. I'm going to survive.
She's not going to stab you with a knitting needle and sit down and cry about it.
And that's the thing is, like, she's gone 40 years of just waiting. And that actually is crazier than what I thought with age 20, because it's even then, like, that's like, so she's gone even longer dealing with this trauma, dealing with this.
And it ruined her life.
Yeah.
And she went through two marriages. She had her daughter taken away from her. Like, it really fucked up her entire life.
Yeah. And so that was, as far as the storyline goes, it's like, when you really think about it, it's like, okay, that's even crazier. But then, on top of that, Michael didn't give a shit. And in a weird way,
we don't get to that realization until Halloween Kills.
Yeah. But that's the thing is, like, when the good doctor, who is so obsessed with Michael, and he ends up guiding him to Lori's house. And Michael's like, oh, shit. Hey, what's up? Like, where have you been?
Yeah,
like,
right.
And then he's like, okay, I guess I'll go kill you now. But that was the thing is, like, he's just doing things. He doesn't care. And that's, I don't know if that would make Lori more insane, because she's like, I've, you know, devoted, you know, I've invested my life in you, and now you don't care.
And
he never did.
And we'll talk about this more next week when we actually do Halloween Kills, but that's a big pill for her to swallow, is the realization that it has nothing to do with her. He just does stuff. He's a dog chasing a car, and he kills because he enjoys killing, and that's kind of the long and the short of it. Like, I think when he recognized Lori and realized that she was the one that got away, that maybe there was more emphasis on her. But even like when he got to her house, he stole the cop car, made it to Lori's house, and I'm drawing a blank on what drove him out there.
It was the doctor.
Oh, that's right. Sartain.
Yeah, Sartain
got him most of the way there.
They knocked him out, and they put him in the back seat, and then they got the baby Strode.
She was
in the back seat with him, and then that's when the, I forget the officer's name.
It's Hawkins.
Hawkins ends up getting got by the doctor, and then that's when, like, the whole thing, like, just started popping off. But they were at Lori's place.
That's right. Okay, I had kind of forgotten. I was like, why did he get there? Because Sartain wanted to put the two of them back together. Honestly, I think if left up to his own devices, Michael would have just caused mayhem around Haddonfield and wouldn't have made it out to the woods.
No.
I don't think he ever would have got there. Because he wasn't looking for her. And so once he was there, he was like, yay, new victim. And then,
you know, one thing that I thought was really, really nice that wasn't a fan nod, Michael never went to his house.
Nope.
You never saw the Myers house.
No, we didn't do that till Halloween Kills.
Yeah. But that's where I was like, oh, man, like, that's actually kind of cool that they didn't do that. And they made the Lori's bunker, you know, kind of like the, I guess, the new, well, not the new, but it was just the kind of a good focal point, because, like, that's all she never left. Like, she was just,
right. It was the only place to make sense to have that showdown between the two of them. And knowing what we know about Michael now, which, again, we'll talk more about next week when we get into Halloween Kills, where he was never targeting her, he never would have gotten out there any other way than Sartain going, what would happen if I put the two of them back together? That's it. That's the only reason that happened.
Now, so, the one thing that kind of bugged me a little bit as far as the, just, I guess, the essence of Michael is the podcasters. So, being podcasters ourselves, like, I totally get the whole, you know, finding content and all that good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And
but they're true crime podcasters, which honestly, some of them are the lowest of the low. And if you're a true crime podcaster, you chose this path in life. But, like, they really are the lowest of the low, because they're just like, let's exploit the lowest common denominator of humanity and just make other people upset in the process.
But at the same time, it's very entertaining.
It's interesting.
Very interesting.
A lot of it's interesting, yeah. But these guys were the top of the heap in terms of the yuckiness, because they're like, well, we're going to go to Smith's Grove, and we're going to see if we can't get something out of Michael, and then we're going to go to Lori's and try to get something out of Lori, and it was pay-to-play with her, because they offered her, like, $3,000 or something like that. It was an envelope full of cash. And they got nothing out of her.
No.
Because as soon as they were like, well, we heard that you've been married and divorced twice, and you don't have a relationship with your daughter, suddenly Lori was like, switching off now. Get the fuck out of my house.
Yeah. But, like, the thing that killed me, though, was that, so they try to talk to Michael, and just seeing Michael just out there, right? You never see his face. You kind of see, like, the side of him. But the fact that they just, when they showed Michael the mask, that kicked everything into gear. And that's where my whole...
It's the magic of the mask.
Yeah. But that's where that whole idea of the Silver Shamrock stuff, where I was like, that could have been the idea, that it's like, we're gonna infect these masks, you know, bewitch them, and then that's gonna put all these kids on a killing spree, and then Michael's mask was one of them, and then that kind of, you know, carried on throughout the thing. However, it wouldn't make sense with the 78 film, because he killed in the clown costume, and then later on he just saw this one mask and was like, oh,
yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, you know, you don't have a bad idea there, but it'd be too hard to fit that into the framework. Yeah. But if you could say this was a detail pulled in from what Rob Zombie was doing with the mask obsession. It was probably something you could kind of work that in there somehow. The mask obsession, you can kind of maybe extrapolate out on that idea. But I think essentially, though, the power of the mask thing, because they didn't even carry that thread through very long. It was really just, how do we wake the beast up? And that was the only way that they figured they could do it, was that, and then this obsession with getting him to speak. The podcasters try to do it. Sartain tried to get him to do it. Allison used that to try to manipulate Sartain by saying, oh, he said something to me. I'll tell you what it is if you let me the fuck out of here. And he wouldn't. And then Michael eventually killed him. Probably one of the best kills of the whole thing, where he fucking curb stomps his head, smashes him like a pumpkin.
Say something! Squish.
Yeah. But God,
yeah, that kill is amazing.
But yeah, the whole thing with the mask is kind of dumb.
It's just it's weird, because it's like they show him the mask and he instantly was just like, huh?
Because he didn't even see it, because his back was turned.
Yeah, but he's like, but they're like, oh, you feel it, like you feel its power, and it's just like, so he has a supernatural connection to the mask.
Sure.
And then on top of that, all of the crazies that are in the yard
they start barking like dogs. Suddenly like...
Yeah, I'm like, so does that mean, like, the evil is now...
It's like they let a squirrel loose at a dog park.
Yeah. And that's where I was like, okay, so if maybe the mask was the thing that was the evil part of it, and then it's like when they show it, kind of like when, it's like when you, like, dogs... You sit there, it's like when they sense something evil, it's like in a Exorcist movie or something like that, they all, like, the dogs start going nuts. like, that's the only thing I could think of is that it was just the mask was the thing that was pure evil, that was controlling Michael. Because the whole time, Michael's been there for 40 years.
And he's done nothing.
He's done nothing. There's no inkling of, like, oh, I want to get out. I'm just going to stand here and not say a goddamn word.
No, he was just there being mute forever.
And then all of a sudden, oh, now you show me my mask. And now it's like, now he has the urge to get out and, you know, roam the town. But it's just like, that's where it's like, kind of like, it's a little shaky and...
A little?
Yeah. So
it's like the Jenga towers already had the middles pulled out. Yeah. It's not great. It's a really weak reasoning to get him fired up. It really is. It's not ideal. I get it. There's... When you're writing, especially when you're writing a script and it's gone through several passes, like, you're doing what you can to try to pull threads together, and it's like... And I think what the only thing I can imagine happened there is Green and McBride were trying to hash this script out, and they're like, well, how do we get him out of the asylum? How do we... Like, the podcaster idea was okay, because it's a very relevant thing to now... The podcaster thing, especially with the true crime stuff, like, having them involved was fine. But honestly, you could still remove them and it wouldn't have made much difference.
Here's the thing that I was thinking of was that it was a plot that was set up by the doctor to get the podcasters in. Because they were, like, I think that the doctor was the one that may have been feeding them information to get them to come.
Probably.
Because then when they showed up and they showed him the mask, doctor didn't say anything. He was like, I want to see what happens.
Yeah.
Let's go. And then it became...
He really wants to get his ass published.
Yeah. And then that whole deal where it's like at the end of the movie where the doctor puts on Michael's mask and he's got this crazy obsession, but it's like... As you said, it's, you know, nega Loomis. It's just one of those things
like
where...
Like, he's just as batshit as Loomis was, but on the other side of it.
And as I'm watching the movie, it's like, I don't know if you caught it, but me being a Batman fan, it's Hugo Strange.
Yeah, he's...
He's the Hugo Strange because he's obsessed... Hugo Strange is obsessed with Batman so much that he... And like in certain points of the comics, like, he's tried to become Batman, mm-hmm. to understand the Dark Knight, and like, because he's absolutely obsessed with the...
He wants to crack that nut.
Yeah, like, it's yeah. It's the mental and the psyche of who Batman is. More so like than like Riddler. It's like, oh, I just got to solve who it is. Riddler figures out later on, but...
Well, Riddler just wants to prove he's smarter. That's all he wants to do. It's all ego with him.
But yeah, but Hugo Strange, like our son has been playing the old, like, Arkham Asylum and Arkham Knight games and stuff like that. And there's a whole Hugo Strange storyline. And that was one of the things where there's plots where Hugo will put people in certain areas to mess with Batman so that he can study Batman more. And it's weird.
So he'll deliberately set things up.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's
happening. And that's where I think that he did that with the podcasters and allowing them to do that, because I honestly think that most I'm pretty sure that, you know, they wouldn't allow them to bring in bags, let alone murder, like, his murder mask.
Yeah,
you know, and
no,
evidence
that,
like
that. Generally, in a psychiatric situation, you're not allowed to bring bags in.
No,
at all. And you, most of the time, depending on what the security levels are, you're getting a pat down too, because they don't want to run a suicide risk on any of that. But yeah, in a psychiatric situation, you're not bringing anything in. You're not bringing in food. You're not bringing in bags. You're certainly not bringing in evidence, murder evidence. So, no, you might be onto something where, from the beginning of the film, it was set up where Sartain was entertaining this whole thing right from the jump. I didn't particularly like the Sartain character. the little twisty bit was kind of interesting, but I wasn't a big fan. For once, I think I'm in the majority. I haven't seen a whole lot of people say they've liked the Sartain
thing. I didn't mind him as much. He kind of felt, like, compared to Loomis, right? Compared to Loomis, because he was always there.
Yeah,
right?
But at least Sartain was crazy with a purpose. Loomis was just nuts.
Loomis was nuts, but he was trying to find Michael to stop him. Like that, it was the Ahab and the whale.
Yeah.
Sartain, he was just like, I want, like, again, it's the Hugo Strain. Just, I want to keep pushing the shark to see what he does. Like, that's just where he became he's the villain of the film. Because if it wasn't for Dr. Sartain, it was just like, we wouldn't have a movie. Like, there would be, like, the podcasters probably wouldn't have shown up. Michael probably wouldn't have gone out. Like, that, everything. So, it was just, and I think it was just because he was trying to get Michael to go towards Lori.
Well, yeah, because his whole thing was, what would happen if?
Yeah.
That was Sartain's driver, was what would happen if. That, and for some reason, trying to get Michael to talk.
Yeah. Which,
there was that weird obsession too.
So, I mean, like, I honestly didn't mind the character because he wasn't throughout the movie. Like, he just kind of just popped up whenever they had to deal with Hawkins and stuff like that. So it wasn't as bad as it was for Loomis, but I didn't mind him as much. And yeah, the twist at the end where we finally find out that he's the one pulling the strings.
Him being the puppet master, the whole thing. I still just didn't particularly care for the character, but I also didn't really care for Loomis either. The Donald Pleasance version. Much at all, which I know is blasphemous to say, but he was creepier than Michael for Loomis, most of those iterations.
For me, I didn't like the Loomis character. It felt a little too...
It was too much. It was too overdone.
It was too much. There was a few movies here and there where I'm like, okay, no, that Loomis I can dig on. But Loomis in a whole drove me crazy. And then once we got into the Rob Zombie, I only really liked the Rob Zombie Halloween 1 Loomis compared to the egomaniac... in H2.
Yeah.
So, it's like, again, Loomis is another one that's just kind of like...
It's just too much!
Yeah. But with this one, the Doctor, I didn't mind. I like that Hawkins, or Officer Hawkins, there was also a backstory with him, too. And they...
Well, he and Lori knew each other, and I liked the Hawk that Hawkins was the one who caught Michael in the first place.
Yeah. So I like that it wasn't just a backstory for Lori and Michael. It was also Hawkins too, because it gave like an extra layer to everything. And also, you know, come to find in Halloween Kills when we get to that, like there's even more that they was pretty good. They flushed it out.
Yeah, they dropped a few decent breadcrumb starters for this one. I agree with you. I really like that they, in Halloween Kills, they started to build off of that. Because it's adding another layer to a story we already know. It's adding more details in, which is great.
It's hard because it's, again, we've seen so much, and it's...
We've been living with these movies for the last couple of months.
Yeah, but it's so much of these movies are just getting kind of rehashed. Even the stuff with Officer Hawkins and his little backstory, it's like, okay, well, that's kind of the same similar backstory from Rob Zombie's and Brackett. Like, that's almost the same thing that he did. So it's like, so we're seeing it again. But, like I said...
I thought this was a weird way to... Maybe it's not that weird, because of the Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, even though it made money, it did well in terms of dollars, it was such a weird movie, and it was so off the Halloween path. Maybe they overcorrected on this one. They were like, make it a lot... They made it too much like the other Halloween movies, because so they, like, over-course corrected.
Well, one thing that I do, that I applaud them on, is that they really wanted to keep it into the same vein of John Carpenter, and they also, like, all the guys at Blumhouse and the production company, they went back and they studied up on how John Carpenter filmed the first one, and they did it the same exact way.
Yeah, because this is supposed to be a direct sequel, so they really wanted to make sure that this fit together with it.
But with all the new fancy, you know, this day and age technology and stuff like that. But I was like,
they wanted to feel the same.
But that is cool. Like, I can respect that 100% because that is time and effort that they didn't have to do that.
Nope.
Blumhouse is, and that's the thing. Another thing, Blumhouse is great. Like, the almost, I think the majority of their movies are actually pretty good.
I mean,
there may be a couple of hits and miss, but, like, even their misses tend to not be, like, that bad.
They don't miss that hard.
No.
I think recently they had one that really whiffed, but I can't remember what it
was. Wasn't that the Vince Vaughn one? Like, I heard that one was actually, like, was funny, but it didn't...
Freaky?
Freaky, yeah.
No, Freaky did fine.
Okay, there was... I could have swore that it was Freaky, but...
Freaky did fine.
But no, but even then, it was like, if it was a miss, it wasn't a hard miss. No. It was just kind of like it just fell under the radar or something like that, but it was just... so again, Blumhouse is, like, when I heard that they were taking on the project... I was like, oh, shit. Like, okay, I'm in. Like, that's... that would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then when I found out that they were doing all the same techniques that John Carpenter did, again, that's completely awesome.
That's a continuity, and you're a big continuity guy. So that's a continuity thing in keeping... It's like, well, if we're going to do a sequel, let's make this feel as much like the movie it's supposed to be sequeling as possible. Which is fine. I mean, I appreciate that. And then, and I think they did a pretty good job of making it feel like it's all in the same universe. Whereas, I think the 20-year timeline doesn't quite feel like it fits in with what happened with the 78 movie.
Yeah.
It feels a little, because we're making this Scream, but with Michael Myers in it. That's kind of where they were going with at least the first part of the 20-year timeline.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm looking forward to what happens with Halloween Ends. I think this movie was a great start. I think I'm going to be a bit more forgiving with the fan winky stuff because this was the first part of a trilogy. I think the point of this movie must have been to hook people back into the universe. And you wanted to give them something familiar while still leading them into something a little bit different.
I mean, it's not like later. It's not like in Jurassic World when that came out. It was like you got through that whole goddamn thing, and it's like almost every turn you're like, oh my god, it's that from the first. Oh my god, it's that. Like it was so much. This one, yes, there was nods, but it wasn't.
You don't think it was egregious?
I don't think it was egregious. It wasn't like, I'm literally doing this because of the first movie. It was, we're doing this because to make it feel similar to the first movie and still give the fans a little bit of something since it's been so disconnected between the two movies, time-wise. And then that's where it's like, for them, the writing, everything was pretty solid. So it's like, you know what? Yeah. I'm actually going to give them a pass on this one. I'm okay with everything they did. I'm okay with the off-screen kills because they were fucking brutal. And that was something that we never really got. But one of my favorite things is not only did we get a really cool Laurie, finally, but we get three Strodes.
I was about to ask you, what are your thoughts on... because people are mixed on Judy Greer's character, but... I really liked Allison. I think in terms of picking up the mantle for the final girl in this series, I think Allison's a good way to go. I really liked her quite a lot. Especially, she had the dunce boyfriend who was forgotten about for the back half of this movie.
Allison, I liked, but it was more because she felt very just there. I was all about Karen.
Really?
She was one of my favorites out of the three Strodes, because it's like, yes, you could sit there and look at Lori and go, okay, she's been dealing with this, you know, crazy batshit mind for 40 years, dealing with this thought that this killer is going to come back after her at some point, and then turn around and now she's, Karen has had to deal with that, deal with the loss of her mom, deal with her mom still trying to keep her daughter up to date and prepared.
She wanted her just prepared for anything, yeah.
But then at the same time, Karen kind of dealing with this thought of, like, I'm done with my mom. Like,
Oh, yeah, because she's like, is nuts.
Yeah. She can't deal with it anymore, and it's very troubling. And it kind of had that same feel for the Josh Hartnett character at age 20, because he also did the same thing, where he's like, Mom, I'm fucking done with you. I can't do this anymore. I'm tired of taking care of you myself.
And not even just the taking care of part, it's just stop projecting your bullshit on me.
Yeah.
She even very specifically said in that weirdly flat moment after the dinner, where she's like, I spent my whole life undoing all of the neuroses and paranoia that she's projected onto me. Like, Karen is openly admitting that my mom fucked me up.
Yeah.
And she has spent decades trying to undo it. That's why she's a shrink.
But Karen was my favorite out of that, and my favorite scene in this film, besides the 2 minute walking scene, like that was just a really cool shot. But my favorite scene is when Michael is taking they're in the little bunker in their little in the basement, and Michael is trying to get to him, and he's moving the island away from her, right? And then she's got the shotgun, and you could tell, like, she's all, like, nervous and shaky, and she's just crying. She's like, I don't think I can do this. And it's just that you could just get that, like, total realization, like, oh, shit. Like, it's just that fight or flight, and she just kind of retreating back into herself, and you're just getting this, like, oh, my God, like, she's just going to fuck this all up. And then Michael shows up, and she's like, gotcha. And then I was like, oh, yeah, shit. Like,
she,
like,
she is like,
she's
she
like,
played him.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, that's so boss.
And because she drew him out, and that was the plan, was just draw him out and then do what you gotta do after that.
But the great thing was that it wasn't a whole thing of, I think in one of the other episodes, I think it was actually in age 20 that I mentioned it, where you get that crazy person that goes, oh, this is gonna happen, this is gonna happen. Then it happens, and they go, I fucking told you.
Yeah,
like,
right?
It's like, you didn't believe me.
I know. I think if Lori was a lower human, she would have definitely had her moment of C.
Yeah. But in this one, it was just more of like, no, Michael's here. Let's deal with this. And then Karen realizing, like, shit, you are right. And then it just, like, the switch just flips with her, and she goes into survival mode, and everything that her mom taught her kicks in, and she has to go and save Allison.
Save her daughter, too. Yeah,
who isn't very well versed in that, but also can hold her own. Mm-hmm. And that was something where, like, you know what? Like, so having three survivor girls that can actually put up a good fight, and having Lori basically making her entire house, her entire fortress, a trap.
Yeah, I want to talk about that
too. It's fucking cool.
I thought,
so yeah,
in terms of
I'm with the Strode women.
Well, awesome. Now, yeah. And there was a nice little moment at the end where it was sort of like girl power.
Yeah.
I'm tired. the house. I want to talk about the house for a second. Because when we get to the beginning with the podcast, which you just see she's got a bunch of locks on the door, it's like, oh God, that cliche. In terms of tactical planning. My God, Lori had this whole thing figured out. She had, she had gates on all of her interior doors. And when Michael got in the house, she was super smart about it. She was not going to let that shit happen again like happened to her before. She went through room by room, cleared the room, locked the door. She was strategically blocking off any potential hiding places that Michael could get into. And one by one by one. And what that would do is, because he couldn't get in or out of those rooms, it was eventually going to herd him down to the kitchen where he needed to be. Because there was no closets for him to hide in. There was no rooms for him to hide in. Nothing. Which is where he needed to be in order for them to get him into the final trap in the basement. And once again, you also have Lori playing the Shape character where she comes out of the shadows because she's behind him in that open pantry door. After Karen gets the shot off. Like, you see her step out. And that's when they all go to drag him down into the basement. But I remember the one scene where he was still, before all the mayhem started inside of Lori's house, Michael was still outside and he broke through the windows in the front door and grabbed her. He was trying to choke her and she had her gun in her hand and she had managed to get like the butt of the rifle, or not the butt, the barrel of the rifle into one of his hands. She got a shot off and blew off a couple of his fingers. I remember you saying right after that, you're like, if this motherfucker has five fingers on that hand next movie, I'm going to lose it.
Yep. And thank God.
Nope. He had three fingers on that hand. The two that got blown off are still blown off.
You know what was even better was, so right before the Halloween Kills trailer dropped, there was a couple of different like merchandising sites. I think like Fright Rags had like a bunch of like Halloween Kills stuff that was going to be put up. But then there was a statue for Halloween Kills that was going to be coming out. I forget what company was doing it, but it was really cool. And it's like, the first thing I did was like,
count the fingers.
I looked at the mask because I was like, oh, like I love like really good statue like details. Like just that is a level of artistry that's just, I mean, even though it's like it could be like it's 3D printed and stuff like that, it's like it's still really cool. But yeah, that was the one thing that I looked. I was like, I like scrolled down. And I was like zoomed in right on his hand. I was like, oh, the statue is missing fingers. Okay, we're good. Like, I think we're gonna be good on this one.
Yeah, there's no more screaming about eyeballs that magically grew back. No, he's not a starfish. He still is missing two fingers on one hand.
Yeah.
And she was shooting every day. She had created her own gun range, which I find kind of ironic considering Jamie Lee Curtis is a very outspoken anti-gun nut.
Didn't Jim Carrey do that too? It was like right after Kick-Ass. Well,
she didn't make a stink about it after this movie came out, but Jim Carrey, after Kick-Ass 2 came out, he was like, this movie is so violent. There's so much gun violence. Did you cash the check?
Yeah.
Okay,
but I know
she's like, very outspoken anti-gun, and it always cracks me up when I see them having to handle these things professionally. So she's shooting, she's cleaning and breaking down her weapons, and blah 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 blah. So I was just like, but aren't you an anti-gun? Mm-hmm. Okay,
and she's doing like, I mean, like not to the level of like the
skilled, a military like, level, but
yeah, no, but like or like was like the cowboy range, like the skilled like tournament shooters and stuff like that. It's like, but she's just sitting there, she's like bah, like popping shots off like pretty quickly, and she's got a good shot, so I'm like, she's been practicing, good.
She had 40 years to figure her shit out. At this point it's like another limb, and that's what a gun should be. It should be like another appendage. It should be a part, an extension of your body. If you're doing it right, that's what it's supposed to be. That's the comfort level you're supposed to have with those. So yay, good for her. And then Allison, who has always wanted a relationship with her grandmother and has been, now that she's in high school and stuff, she's trying to have a relationship with her grandmother behind her mom's back. But at that point, if I were Allison, I'd be like, you know what, Graham, I love you, but this is bad for my health. I don't know if I can do this. So anyway, I don't have a ton more to add.
The only thing that I wanted to touch on a little bit, just a little bit real quick, was the high school friends. So Allison's boyfriend was interesting because...
Douchebag.
Yeah, big douche nozzle. So... But then his friend was Oscar, right? Oscar was weird because it had the like that Josh Gad. I couldn't tell.
Yeah, a lot of people have called him like baby Josh Gad.
Yeah, he was very awkward because I know kids like that. I'm kind of one of those kids where it's just very awkward, maybe a little thicker. But it's just like he was very popular. And it's like
he had a great personality. That's why.
Yeah, I mean, like he just like didn't give a fuck and just kind of let his personality go. I like kids like that, but then at the same time, they get this level in their head that's above their pay grade. Like it's just it's a weird thing, and it's like then they overshoot.
So they're overconfident, maybe?
Yeah, it's a weird thing. Like some of the kids that I remember back in high school that would do that, they were probably ugly as sin, but their confidence level was like, and then that scene where he's trying to go after Allison, you could definitely tell like he was trying and then it failed, and then that whole confidence just shot back down to where that level is that they, I guess he would typically kind of be at, because he was whiny and he was just like, oh, look, I'm so pathetic, and it's like, you don't know how it is, and it's just like, that's...
And how does one get fed guacamole in all these sexy ways? I'm still trying to ponder that one out.
Yeah.
So. Like, there's nothing sexy about guacamole. It's delicious, but there's nothing sexy about it.
Yeah. I mean, so, it was just... Like, he was just very awkward.
Yeah.
I mean, but then after, like, a few, like, scenes, like, he became comfortable. Like,
it was just... His kill was probably one of the cooler ones.
Very cool.
Where he got impaled on a fence bike.
Yep. And that was something I was so the kills for the movie, the two-minute walkthrough, one of the best. The doctor's head stomp scene, which, again, another... head stomp scene, because they did that in H2 with Rob Zombie, right?
So yeah, with the bouncer.
Yeah. So, but not as violent.
Oh, no. That one, this one was way tamer compared to what Tyler Mane did to that man.
Yeah, just blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, then you have the head stomp. But this one was really awesome. So, you have Oscar crying like a bitch.
On somebody else's lawn.
Oh, and it was the family that in... the 78 film that Michael stole the knife from, the lady that was doing the sandwich, that was their house.
Yeah.
Because he thought that it was...
Yeah, he's like Mr. Elgin or whatever his name was.
Yeah, I forget the name. But he thinks that Michael is that guy. So I was like, okay, cool. I like that nod.
I was just cutting through. I'll be on my way. Yeah. And then he's sitting there and they did the trick with the floodlights.
Which is so good.
It's a tennis tension builder.
Yeah, because then that just shows that, like, how still Michael can be so that it doesn't set off lights. And then it's just like, he just boop, boop, like, and then goes right for the slash. So fucking cool. And then, again, another
Oscar screaming.
Yeah. So, and then...
I thought for a minute, I was like, does this guy really think he's going to be murdered? Because he's screaming like he's actually being murdered.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So, but that was the thing, is like, so Oscar, like...
Another male scream.
He gets the slash, and then Allison goes back for him, and then sees him just hanging from the fence post, and then Michael, like, showing up, and then Allison just having this realization, like... holy shit, it's real.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
oh, Grandma wasn't crazy.
Yeah. So I was like, that was fucking cool. But yeah, it's just very... I love the brutality of the kills. Even if they're off camera, it still holds up when you do see it because it's still brutal. It's kind of like in... I will give it in H20, where they have the girl that's dangling from the light fixture... that he kind of turned into a pumpkin. Like, you know, just got the lights, you know, showing through your eyes. It's like, so, stuff like that where it's like, okay, yeah, it's off you know, off camera, and it's pretty, I mean, that one's a little bit more excessive. This one is just, I'm just going to put this fat kid on a fence post, and then that was it. But it was just the way that it just went through his, like, jaw up, like towards his eye. It's like, through his mouth. I was like, that's pretty fucking
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, that's pretty
that's like Vlad the Impaler stuff.
Yeah,
right there.
It was pretty serious. All right, so skull ratings.
I'll let you go on this one.
I gave this one a 3.7. Honestly, despite the fact that this is a retread, this is the best version of a retread we've gotten. This is probably, yes, there are some, and I'm a big fan of CinemaSins on YouTube, and he did a great job of pointing out all of the fuckery.
You gotta stop watching those before the episodes, because I feel like a lot of those really gets into fuckery mode.
Yeah,
with you.
Well, I watched that CinemaSins weeks ago. It's also, it doesn't help that Curtis is a huge fan.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it's pretty funny. I actually watched CinemaSins today on, I forget what movie it was, but anyway, I watched one today and I was just like, oh dear. But anyway, it was on Suicide Squad, the James Gunn Suicide Squad.
Oh.
It was pretty funny. Doctor Who? but it's still the best version of what we've gotten. I think in terms of being a direct sequel, if you have to erase a timeline, this is probably the best way you're going to be doing it. I was shocked as fuck when I saw that Danny McBride was one of the writers for this thing.
Yep.
Because it's weird to see a comedy writer do literally anything else. If you saw Spiral, you would know that wasn't great having Chris Rock at the helm of that one. That one didn't turn out so good.
Really? I actually have yet to see that one, and I kind of feel like a bad fan because I feel like I should have already seen it, but
I saw it last year and it was
okay.
I mean, watch it if you feel like you need to.
Oh, I'm gonna watch it just because, like, I just it's that OCD where it's like
it's the completionist thing.
However, that is such a weird backhanded compliment, or not compliment, but just backhanded thing for me, because it's like I have not seen the final episode of Breaking Bad or Psych because I didn't want them to end. So I know how they end. I'd never actually physically seen the last episode. So
weird.
Yeah, it's very, very weird.
But
I'm a completionist, but yet not.
Yeah, but it's particularly.
I'm an enigma.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you're just mostly, it's with Spiral, you're just mostly watching Chris Rock squint for 90 minutes. That's kind of what you're watching. But anyway, yeah, a 3.7 for this one. I thought this was a great launching point for getting back into the franchise. James Jude Courtney. We didn't talk about him.
Oh, shit.
I'm going to drag him into this real quick.
Okay.
He's probably my second favorite Michael Myers. I think he's fantastic. I didn't have the same apprehensions you did when you found out we were going to be doing, like, 60-year-old Michael. I didn't have the same apprehensions at all. I was like, okay, but how are they going to find a guy? Like, are we going to find a guy about that age? Or are we just going to use a younger guy? Like, what are we going to do here? No, we had two older gentlemen playing Michael Myers in this movie, Nick Castle and James Jude Courtney. And I thought that Courtney had a presence. I thought that he brought this quiet intensity. He seemed dangerous. Like, he radiated aggression and danger, even though he was cool as a cucumber. Like, there was no wasted movement. There was no extra steps. He was very efficient in what he did. He was still strong as an ox, but he was, it's like, he managed to take all of the best components of Michael Myers and kind of chipped off a lot of the bad components of Michael Myers and made a pretty cool version of that character that was very much his own, which is so weird because it's a dude in a jumpsuit and a mask, like, mostly played by stunt guys, but he had so much his own personality to this character that it worked. Like, he somehow became a standout version of this. I think still Tyler Mane is my favorite just because he was an animal, and that was scary as fuck. But this is a really, really close second version of the Myers character for me.
Nice. Yep. I 100% agree.
I knew you would.
Tyler Mane is my... he is my Michael. I love the way that Tyler Mane, like, just... when he would, like, move or he would look, and it just kind of had that same feel as, like, when... because they did a good symmetry between him and the kid from H1. But it's just the brutality and just his size and... this is everything. So he is my Michael. But for me, when, as I mentioned before the movie actually came out and I did my whole thing, I was like, I don't want to see an old man Michael or whatever. When I sat down to watch this film the first time, that thought never touched my brain.
Nope.
I never thought of him as old man Michael. It was that good. He played Michael so good that it made me forget all the bullshit that I was thinking
about.
You
forgot that he was 60 years old.
It was that good where it was seamless. And so, and having both actors play Michael in this film, I think really helped out because, like, there was the shots where Michael would be in, like, the window. And, you know, something really still.
That was when we had Nick Castle. Nick Castle. But there's one shot where Michael's body is leaning into a bedroom, and I can't remember if it was Lori or Karen were on the floor or were on the ground outside of the building looking up, and they saw through the window, and it was like, oh fuck. I think it was Karen.
Yeah,
it was the oh fuck moment. I have nothing but positive things to say about him in this movie. There's a few problems with it, but Michael is, for once, Michael's not one of them.
Yeah.
It's Michael, great. It's Michael refreshing.
It was, again, that is a very good word, refreshing. To actually have Michael feel like a threat, to actually make him...
And the mask!
The mask looks great.
The mask didn't suck.
No, the mask looked great. They did, I like that there was an aging on the mask, and then it was just, even like with like, as it's progressed along with Halloween Kills, like they're still keeping up again continuity. They're damaging it. There, it's warped. It's
aging like latex wood.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was like, it's fantastic. So, and that was like one of the things like with Halloween, like H2, like with Rob Zombies, is like you could see just that deterioration of the mask. As it just aged.
It was so raggedy, but he insisted on hanging on to it.
Yeah. So I mean, that was the thing was. This Michael was absolutely fantastic. He, for me, it made me understand that premise of him just being the shark.
Well, he finally was the shark.
Yeah. So, and on top of that, they didn't give me any bullshit scenarios in the story that...
He's going after a sister.
So many plots. No, that's the one thing about Michael that I love is that it... Lori is the sister. When they even mention in this movie, they were like, oh yeah, I heard your grandmother was the sister of the thing. Like, no, that's just some bullshit story. And they're like, I'm like, what the fuck? No! Like, that was like, it was like the one like thing that tied everything together.
And yeah,
like,
but now it made it more, it opened it back up for Michael to actually be the shark. And you could see that, and we saw that in Halloween Kills, where he just does stuff.
But it was just funny. It's like when I heard that, I was just like, are you fucking kidding me?
I kind of like, though, that was such a hand wavy way. Again, I think it's
so
another.
Mad.
Pretty sure it's another Danny McBride line.
but that was the one. Oh, and then the fucking boyfriend blowing up pumpkins. I was like, God, what? Like,
Dave's a dick.
Well, asshole.
So what's your skull rating?
So I'm going to give this one a 4.
Hey.
This one was high for me. Back when we watched it the first time and then we did our the whole franchise review, I remember this one being our
number one.
So yeah. I was pretty happy that this one still was boom right up there. So I'm giving this one a 4. The kills were fucking cool, even if they were off screen, as I mentioned before. So Michael was fucking boss. And the fucking final girls were also boss. And Karen stole the show for me when she did the whole gotcha gotcha, bitch. It's like that whole
thing.
I think
Little Black Kid probably got me most.
He was awesome, too, just because...
You know, I'd be in bed reading me a story, and I'm out here staying up past my bedtime, clipping my nasty-ass toenails. He ad-libbed all of that.
Oh, my God, it's so good.
Yeah.
So, and the chemistry with him and the babysitter, I forget her name, but... Yeah, so it's, like, the chemistry between the two of them was really good. And then when he was just like, oh, there's a guy in my closet. And him having to deal with all that shit, I was like, that's pretty harsh. Like, I mean, I would love to see more of that kid. But it was just like, man, I was like, what a standout. but for me, I'm giving this one a 4, which is pretty high for, I think it's... pretty close to like Rob Zombie's Halloween 1 for me. I mean, it's up there. And for all the shit that I gave it before even seeing the film, I was like, for it to suck me in and actually make me like, it was for the first time besides the Rob Zombie stuff, I actually wanted to go and own these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've never wanted to own a Halloween movie before. And so I actually wanted to go and get this. Like, when after Halloween Ends comes out, I think I wanted to see if they come out with some type of, like, box set deal or what have you. And
mm-hmm.
some triple pack. But, yeah. I mean, yeah. So, 4.0. What'd you...
3.7. Yes. I just knocked a couple points off just because a few fractions off because I was a little bit disappointed with the rehash again.
It's still nice to actually not shit on a movie.
No. And I would even argue, I was like, you know, some of the shit I was picking at really isn't as bad as it could be. Because this series, and when we get to the wrap-up episode in a few weeks, this series has some lulus. Woo! We thought that Nightmare on Elm Street had some real discrepancies in quality, varying from, like, movie to movie. This one, Halloween, woof. But anyway.
Hey, still, high marks on this one, and I'm actually excited to continue on with the last two in the series for this one.
Yeah, so next week is Halloween Kills. We're coming round the mountain to the end.
Oh, God.
And so, shut up.
The level of cringe.
Shut up. It's fine. I'm excited because we're coming to the end of this. And then we're going to roll our way into, once we finish the Halloween series, we're going to roll our way into the Romero of the Dead. And that's pretty much going to end our year, which is great.
Which is crazy to think about.
Yeah. Once we do our wrap up, I think the Of the Dead series takes us almost to the end of the year. I think it's the last 2 weeks we have to fill. But much excite. And I was really excited when we did the Halloween, the zombie movies. I was like, finally, we're getting into the good ones. And now we're getting into the good ones. So join us next week as we do Halloween Kills. We'll make sure you subscribe so we drop in your favorite podcatcher first thing on Tuesday. Like, share, comment, review. 5-star reviews are greatly appreciated. Join us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Slasher, at Creepin' It Real, R-E-E-L as in movie reel. You can email us at creepinitreal.cm@gmail.com. We're always up for movie ideas, or if there's a franchise somebody wants us to cover, like, very badly. We have a few ideas we've been kicking around for after the first of the year, but nothing's really for sure just yet. You can email us and let us know.
Yeah, there's a lot of franchises, so we it's like...
so many.
There's a lot of them in this.
And then, if you like us and you want our merch, you can get that at creepinitreal.redbubble.com, or there's a link in the Instagram bio. Just click or tap that, and it'll bring you directly there. Just a reminder, while Halloween is quite close, we're only a few weeks out from that, Christmas is coming up real fast behind it. It's bringing up the rear. So jump on that real quick, creepinitreal.redbubble.com, and fill your stocking with something nicer than coal.
And what's nice, too, is that around this time, like especially like around Black Friday, they do some crazy good sales. And I think it's like if you download the app, too, you get like a 20% discount just on your first purchase already.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, you help us out. I mean, and on top of that, you know, by repping the merch, but then go through, save some money, and then, like I said, you get those emails for Black Friday, and I'm talking, like, they do some crazy good sales. So, I mean, I'm talking, yeah, like, for stickers, pillows, mugs, cups, like, all types of shit. So, I mean, yeah, go rep us some creeping stuff and save some money.
Yep. But until next week, I'm Mistress Meg.
I'm that good buddy Lunchbox. Oh, damn it, I got peanut butter on my penis again.